It's time to head out on the front porch on KFRM. Grab your favorite drink, sit back, relax, and enjoy the conversation on the front porch. It's time to head out on the front porch on KFRM. Grab your favorite drink, sit back, relax, and enjoy the conversation on the front porch.
Hello, this is Amy Hadachek, and with us today we have Bill Bunting, the Deputy Director of NOAA National Weather Service Storm Prediction Center. And Bill, thank you so entirely much for being here today. We're really honored to have you.
Yeah, it's great to be with you today, Amy. Thank you.
Well, thanks. And what would you say is the most important thing you want to tell people about the volatile spring weather in the Central Plains and Oklahoma, Kansas, and Nebraska especially?
Yeah, we're certainly approaching that time of the year, and I think there are two things that really stand out in any advice I would give. Number one is the importance of advanced planning. It definitely saves lives. And now is the time to develop those plans if you don't already have them. The second thing I would say is make sure you have more than one method of receiving severe thunderstorm and tornado watches and warnings so that when those warnings are issued for your location, you'll make sure you have that information and can react quickly.
Okay. And sometimes when you're watching television for the different aspects to come on and alert you, sometimes if the TV goes off, you need not to count only on that TV, like you said. Make sure you have more than one way of getting the information.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll probably talk about it more as we go further into this, but a weather radio, the NOAA weather radio, makes an excellent, if nothing else, a backup warning system. And because of the warning alarm tone, it can wake you up at night. And so a lot of nighttime severe weather occurs really nationwide, but certainly in the central U.S. And so really important to have something that can wake you up at 2 a.m. when that dangerous storm is approaching your location.
And Bill, that's especially important because a lot of storms can be nocturnal storms where people go to bed thinking, oh, I don't see anything on the radar, nothing's approaching, and then 3 hours later a squall line is formed and all of a sudden, you know, there it is in the middle of the night.
Yep, you're exactly right. And I would say the central U.S., along with the southeast U.S., especially in the winter, are two parts of the country where you can get deadly nighttime storms. In much of the rest of the U.S., storms tend to peak in the afternoon and evening, and they often weaken as you get the loss of daytime heating and the air mass cools. But in the central U.S. especially, we have a certain set of conditions that occur quite frequently that allows those storms to sometimes intensify after dark and actually reach peak intensity during the overnight hours. So having a method to wake you up and alert you to an approaching severe storm is absolutely crucial.
Okay, that's really good information. And also, you know, there are two seasons for severe weather and possible tornadoes. There's spring, which of course is now, and the secondary season being fall. Some people say fall. No, that doesn't really happen, but we do. But we're in the main season right now, so we really want to heighten people's awareness as they're listening right now about March, April, and May, and being prepared and having the two ways of getting the information, and also knowing what to do when a watch and a warning are issued. And we've got a couple minutes here before we take a break, but I wanted to ask you also, and we want to tell people about ranking severe weather potential when they hear, well, there's a slight risk or an enhanced risk or moderate or high. Those are the categories, but when they hear slight, it doesn't mean just, oh, slight, not a big deal.
Yep, you're exactly right. The words that we use to communicate risk are marginal risk, slight risk, enhanced, moderate, and high. And some of those words have been around for almost 50 years. And so when we started to use those words to communicate risk, we were mainly talking to other meteorologists. And so now that it's the Storm Prediction Center forecasts have become available to anyone who has an interest in following our information and our updates, we've given some thought to how we might change those words. But one thing we've learned as we have done that is that there aren't five words in the English language that have uniform meaning for everyone from lower risk to higher risk. And so what we're doing is we're supplementing those words that I just mentioned with colors and numbers And eventually we'll use icons to communicate risk. And our hope is that through all of these methods, people will understand just what the risk level is in their area and what actions to take as a result.
Okay. And I know, yeah, years ago it used to be just the slight, moderate, and high. So we've added enhanced. That was a few years ago after slight. And I've heard people say, oh, nothing is going to happen. It's slight risk. But I know, personal experience, tornadoes have happened in slight risk. So people can never say slight is no big deal.
You're exactly right. The risk category is a function of storm coverage, not intensity. Although as we get higher risk, intensity does often increase, but it's not guaranteed. So very dangerous storms can occur in a marginal risk or a slight risk. It just means that there'll be very few and far between.
Okay. And for people checking in the daytime, I remember when I was speaking, different groups like students in, you know, a huge auditorium, but also people in businesses. And of course, adults would understand more about checking the convective outlook. Is that something you recommend for them to look each day or at least know whether that day is going to be a slight risk day or a moderate or something like that?
It certainly, yeah, if folks are interested, I would recommend it. There are lots of different ways to get the information from the Storm Prediction Center. Some of it's direct. Some of it can be through other trusted sources. And I would also say don't focus on the risk level. If there is any severe risk at all, you should take it seriously. And it doesn't have to be just a high risk, which is our highest category of threat level, to be a dangerous day. So if there is a chance for severe storms, honestly, what I would do is just take all of those days and all of those threats seriously and don't focus on just, you know, with the magnitude of the risk, because one bad storm hits your house, it's a really bad event.
Right. Yeah. And it's not just slight to that person. It's huge. And so, and how about when traveling? I'm just wondering, any best recommendations for the best way to get things? I know the weather radio will take on the area that you go to. In other words, if somebody lives in Clay Center, Kansas, they're going to get the National Weather Service closest to that. But if they travel and suddenly now they're in Kansas City or in Norman, Oklahoma, where you all are based, it's going to pick up the Weather Service right there in Norman or Kansas City, wherever they have gone.
Yes. Weather radio covers about 90%+ of the U.S. population. So for almost any area you might travel, there is certainly very likely to be weather radio coverage in that area. Also, with the prevalence of smartphones and apps, you could go to weather.gov, which is the National Weather Service's main webpage, and click on areas that you're traveling to and perhaps a spot or two along the route and get a quick update on the forecast for those areas. Going to the Storm Prediction Center site also would give you sort of a national scale view. So if it's a long trip that you're taking over multiple days, you could, at least from a severe weather standpoint, get a sense of, is this something I need to be thinking about, perhaps concerned about, to plan my trip around, or does it look like I can travel safely? So lots of different tools. I recommend finding your trusted sources, relying on them, but don't rely on any one source, because certainly with technology, it's possible that that source wouldn't be available, or just the more sources you rely on, the more consistent the message will be that you get.
Okay. And we're going to go to a break in just a couple minutes here, but being prepared is so important. What might be some other things people would have? I mean, I know I keep water bottles and we have a storm shelter, but some people, basements are first, of course, and then if somebody doesn't have a basement, a storm shelter, or if not, there are just numerous other things. First of all, there are buildings nearby, if it's a safe building that's open, and if not, you know, just being in an interior room in the lowest floor of your home. So anything about that you might say?
Yeah, everything that you said is really important. The first part of any plan is to figure out in advance where you and your family, or if you're at work, coworkers, where you will go to seek shelter if a dangerous storm is approaching that location. We recommend getting below ground if that's possible, or in a storm shelter. If that's not available, get into the central part of the building that you're in, lowest floor. Put as many walls between you and the storm as possible, because so many injuries during tornadoes are caused by trauma to the head and upper body. If there's a helmet or anything you can put around your neck and head to prevent injuries, that will often be can make the difference between being injured seriously and perhaps just minor injuries. So all of those things are important. But again, now is the time to think about where you're going to go when the warnings are issued for your area.
Right, to have a plan and not say, wow, I should be thinking about what would we do. But yeah, I mean, plan now.
Yes, too many people will, I've talked to them after storms and damage surveys when we visit communities, and they'll say, you know, when the warning, the tornado warning was issued, or I saw the tornado, I started thinking, where should I go? And sometimes the training that they've received in the past pays off and they think of the right location, but it's so much less stressful if you think about it now and you share that information with your family, with your coworkers, with whoever you need to for the places that you find yourself, and make sure that when the warnings are issued, you know in advance. You've rehearsed, you've practiced, you've done drills, and you know where to go, and you don't have to think about it. And then we can talk about some of the other things that you need to have handy just in the event power goes out or you find yourself unable to travel for a day or two while the damage is cleaned up.
Okay, well, coming up in just a few minutes, sometimes people get confused, wondering exactly what is a watch, what is a warning. We're going to clarify in just a moment so that people never wonder. And so coming up, Bill Bunting, the Deputy Director with NOAA National Weather Service Storm Prediction Center, and we'll be back with more with Bill in just a moment. Amy Hadachek, along with Bill Bunting, the Deputy Director of the NOAA National Weather Service Storm Prediction Center, based in Norman, Oklahoma. And Bill, we are so thrilled you're here today. You're giving us incredible information, and this is a really good time to remind people and for people's alertness to be even more enhanced. And so we talked about several things a few minutes ago, but sometimes people get confused and they tell me, you know what? What exactly is a watch and what is a warning? And I thought we'd let them know. I know that I think of a watch like sort of watch out, these conditions are possible, whether it's a severe thunderstorm watch or a tornado watch or any watch. And then with a warning, I tell people kind of think of it like a flashing red warning light. But of course, there's a lot more technical explanation. So I'm going to let you go ahead and explain what people should know.
I think that's actually a really good way to see it. In the end, you want, I think, when people hear the word watch or warning, to think of, you know, what that conjures up in your mind. And I really like the analogy of a warning being a flashing red light, because that's the most urgent alerting system that we can all think of. A watch simply means what you said. It means conditions are favorable. Watch the sky, watch TV, listen for, you know, information from the sources that you rely on. Perhaps there's a phone app in there too somewhere, but really it just means for the next 4 to 6 hours or so, no matter what you have going on in your life that day, monitoring the weather needs to be one of them. And we issue severe thunderstorm and tornado watches here at the Storm Prediction Center in collaboration with local National Weather Service offices around the country. And there are 116 of those that cover the lower 48 states. And so we're in contact with them. We're assessing the severe weather potential and discussing the need to issue a watch. And the goal of a watch is just to give everyone who's in that threatened area a heads up that warnings may be coming in the next few hours, that the threat that we've hopefully been talking about for a few days now is getting closer to actually becoming a reality. And so the watch is that cue that weather is now becoming more important and you need to monitor for warnings. And then when that warning is issued for your area, that's the most urgent message that the National Weather Service has to let you know that, you know, maybe it's large hail or damaging winds, or if it's, you know, one of the worst type situations, maybe it's a tornado approaching your community. But monitoring watches and warnings, knowing the difference, is a really key part of being prepared and staying safe.
Okay. And so I think that's fascinating that the watches are issued by your office. And, of course, you, as the deputy director of the SPC, the Storm Prediction Center, you oversee everything and you know every day all the watches all across the lower 48, I guess Hawaii and Alaska, too. We can't forget about them. But really just monitoring all the conditions, I mean, that's huge to be looking at the entire country and being in charge of giving the heads up.
Yeah, our work here is important. We know that, and that certainly, honestly, permeates our approach to the job every day. The people that we hire here, many times they'll tell us, I wanted to work at the Storm Prediction Center since I was 10 or 12 years old.
Oh.
The realization that you're someplace where doing our job well can save lives, can have a real impact. And, you know, some of us have grown up with a fascination with extreme weather. And so if that's the case, where else would you rather work than, you know, in a center like the Storm Prediction Center, whose mission is almost completely focused on severe thunderstorms and tornadoes. We also do some fire weather forecasting that is very important, but certainly what most people know us for is our severe weather forecast and our severe thunderstorm and tornado watches.
So how it goes is that you all determine that day, you know, what area is, you know, most likely, and there are a lot of parameters. I know going to meteorology school, there's just so much. And I mean, we could go on for hours. We won't. But there's so much information about analyzing maps and just, you know, what conditions are like, what happened the night before. Maybe there's a leftover boundary, you know, is there shear, is there lift, is there instability, is there moisture, and then just looking at so many things. So we just have enormous respect for you and everyone who works there do that. So you all issue the watches at the Storm Prediction Center in Norman, and then the actual warnings, that is given over to the local office where anybody lives. So when that warning comes out, say, for instance, somebody lives in, you know, near Clay Center. So the nearest weather service office would be, maybe it's Topeka, which it probably is at that point, or it could be Wichita. Those would be the areas, the local areas responsible for issuing the actual warnings in that case. Say, for instance, there was a severe thunderstorm warning required or a tornado warning. That would be the local office analyzing their radars to issue that or using storm spotters. Would that be the case?
That's exactly right. Yeah, the 116 local National Weather Service offices, we call them WFOs, which is an abbreviation for Weather Forecast Office. Each of them has what's known as a county warning area, which is a predefined geographic area, counties, parishes in Louisiana, independent cities, and that constitutes their area of responsibility. And so they're focused. Not only do they watch the weather and issue the warnings for those areas, but they also go out and meet emergency managers, public safety officials, elected officials, give talks to schools and civic clubs, and they get to know those areas and the people who live in them very well. And so they have become the local experts regarding the impacts of severe storms in their area of responsibility. And so when you combine expertise from Storm Prediction Center meteorologists who deal with severe weather day in, day out, and that local expertise from those weather forecast offices, you really have the perfect setup to do, you know, a very, very good job consistently in keeping people informed and keeping them safe.
Yeah, that's so important. Well, yeah, so because I know that I have jumped in at times being in TV meteorology, and then other times running ham radios and working with the National Weather Service and jumping in and letting them know something's going on or they have storm spotters out there. And I know those are still so important because those are the eyes on the ground. So you still need the ground truth, even with all the technology today, right?
Yes, it's interesting. You know, my career, I'm approaching year 39,
wow,
I believe, doing this job.
And you're so young still.
Changes, well, I know, I feel young. The changes that I've seen are amazing. But despite all those changes and the continued advancements of computer models, sophistication, Our typical forecaster workstation has 12 to 15 monitors looking at every data set that you could imagine.
Wow.
But in the end, what values, what produces as much value as all of that would be a report from the eyes and ears of a trained spotter. What they're seeing, the sounds they're hearing, are still extremely important. And so for that reason, the National Weather Service does train storm spotters as much in 2024 as when I started my career back in the 80s.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, those are really great. And when people get on the National Weather Service local webpage to their area, it'll say the storm spotter schedule. Now, there's some that already have taken place in the plains. I noticed there were a few in earlier March, and there's still some left over, I believe, for April. So people can always travel anywhere to around the region and go to those. And so that's really awesome. Yeah, those classes are great. And even for somebody who feels like, you know, I don't know if I really want to be a spotter, I'm a little nervous, maybe they don't feel as comfortable, you know, and I mean, I'm not nervous, but maybe they're thinking that, then they could just go to the class and just get more education about storm structure and what they're looking at. I mean, it's a fabulous education.
It is, and you're right. It's not just open to people who want to be storm spotters. These talks are typically open to anyone who's interested, and I actually recommend, frankly, that everyone go through the training. And if there's not training that's near you that you can attend, there is virtual training, online training that you can take at a time that's convenient for you. But what I think makes it really helpful is that it teaches you how to distinguish between clouds that are truly threatening and clouds that we refer to using meteorological jargon as an SLC, which is a scary looking cloud. And those clouds, you know, they look ominous, but they're really not necessarily dangerous. And storm spotter training will help you to differentiate between the two. And, you know, just the peace of mind that comes with looking at a storm and saying, okay, we have to worry about lightning, we have to worry about heavy rain, but that's probably not going to produce a tornado. And that can be very reassuring.
Yeah, Jeff, definitely. I remember even we had the posters that had all the different clouds, and I had that taped up at one point and memorized them, you know. And so it's really cool when you're out there and you can identify clouds or know, like you said, is it just a scary looking one or is it, oh my gosh, what if there's green in there? And I think I see green in that case. And then, you know, there's hail, and after hail, the storm structure could come. A pendant, which would be a possible tornado. So it's good to know the whole structure. And that those are great classes, and they're free. And again, people don't have to necessarily then become spotters. You know, they can just learn. But so that sounds, you know, really, really interesting. Well, upcoming in just a few minutes, to me, this is really fascinating. And Bill Bunting with the Storm Prediction Center, a meteorologist, and I know you have one of the most intriguing jobs in the world running the operations center at the Storm Prediction Center. And coming up in a few minutes, we want to hear what is it like when a severe weather outbreak is forecast. There is extra staff probably called in, many extra hours, and all eyes are on radars. So we're going to ask Bill more about that coming up right after this. And we're back. This is Amy Hatichek with Bill Bunting today, the Deputy Director of the NOAA National Weather Service Storm Prediction Center. Also, we call it SPC for Storm Prediction Center. And we are really thrilled to have Bill here today. It's just amazing the work that they do, overseeing radars and all the information to issue the watches, which let us know right off the bat about any conditions that are possible that day in severe weather. And this is the season in our area for the possibility of severe weather that can happen. And sometimes it happens quickly. And so, Bill, first of all, I know how fascinating it is as a meteorologist. And I mean, I'm not running the Storm Prediction Center, you are. And so we just so look up to that, and you, and one of the most intriguing jobs in the world. And what's it like there? What's the scenario? When is it just kind of crazy, or is it controlled chaos? Or when there's a severe weather outbreak, is there extra staff, extra people looking at how many radars? Kind of give us the flavor, if you will.
Sure. You know, and I do get this question often, and I think folks might be surprised at my answer, and that is, it's actually not chaotic at all. It's actually very orderly and very, sometimes it's even amazingly quiet, because what you will hear mostly would be all six of us, and that's how many are typically working during the day, typing furiously, preparing severe weather outlooks, preparing those technical mesoscale discussions that broadcasters and so many others rely on, typing the tornado watches themselves. We get really used to a fast operational tempo here. We average some threat of severe weather about 304 days a year. And so with that kind of frequency, you know, if we weren't prepared, we would probably pay a price in terms of the quality of our forecast. So our forecasters here know the days that are really important. We come to work with a pretty serious mindset every day. But on the bigger days, there's definitely a focus on how bad it could be and making sure that we do everything within our power to get the message out.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that is interesting. I would typically think of not people running around, but just sort of huge amount of staff. But wow, that's very reassuring to know that everyone is quietly typing out their warnings and it's very orderly. And I know I've been there and you've given me a tour and, you know, I've covered a lot of events, going to different weather conferences, also myself being a member of the National Weather Association and the American Meteorological Society, and having both broadcast seals of approval. I know we've stopped in there during the conferences and visited, and we really appreciate that. You're always great about explaining. And I think that's how the Weather Service is, just always trying to educate anyone who has any questions. And that's so important. And I know that's your whole mission, to educate people and inform and save lives and property.
Yep, it is. And it's a team effort. You know, it's, as the National Weather Service or even as the Storm Prediction Center, we can't accomplish anything by ourselves. We can only accomplish it when we work with those who help us get the information out, and then hopefully it's received by those who are in danger in time to take some action, to make a decision to keep them and their family safe. So, you know, we're glad to have visitors. We're glad to talk with broadcast meteorologists, with meteorologists in the private sector, with emergency managers, because we're all part of that integrated warning team that works together to save lives. So, again, I can't overstress how important it is for all of us to work together, not just today when we're talking about outreach and education, or perhaps in a few days when, you know, dangerous storms are approaching a town.
Exactly. It takes everyone, and I know that may sound trite, but it really does, because anyone out there, the eyes and the ears, and you guys back there, and it just is amazing. And also, in addition to when we talk about severe weather, typically, you know, the things people, when they see the videos, it's, ooh, wow, the tornado or the wall cloud or the lightning strikes or cloud-to-ground lightning, the CGs and other things. But other things that are incredibly important and maybe almost, I don't want to say more important, but certainly equally, is the threat of heavy rain and flooding and making sure people know what to do and not drive into water where they can't tell how deep it is.
Yep, it's an excellent point. The two most common dangers of any thunderstorm are lightning and heavy rain and associated flooding. And so while 10% or so of all thunderstorms may be technically classified as severe, with, you know, 1 inch or larger diameter hail, 60 mile per hour winds or greater, or the threat of a tornado, the vast majority of storms that we will all experience will be mainly a safety hazard for lightning and for heavy rain. And, you know, fortunately, it seems in recent years the number of lightning fatalities has diminished, and that, I think, is partly due to the more information and better awareness of the hazards. But flash flooding is the number one thunderstorm-related killer, more so than tornadoes, more so than lightning. I think a big part of it is because we've all driven through a flooded intersection or on a flooded road, and in most cases everything's fine. But you're exactly right. If you don't know how deep the water is or it begins to flow very quickly, it really only takes 6 to 12 inches of fast-moving water to sweep a car off the road. And at that point, you're virtually helpless unless you can get out quickly and get to a safe area. So we really want to stress that while we're talking about tornadoes and damaging windstorms and large hail, we can't ignore the risk of flash flooding and just heavy rain in general and make sure we take that threat seriously.
I know I've heard people say, well, I don't want to abandon my vehicle, and because if it's, you know, if you're heading in a direction, if you can't turn around and the water's high, they say, oh, I don't want to leave. Well, you don't want to leave your vehicle, but you also don't want to die in the floods. So it's important.
You're exactly right. And, you know, I've seen too many videos over the course of my career of people, A, overestimating their confidence in getting across or underestimating the risk, however you want to look at it. And then once they get swept off the road, being virtually helpless to get out of their car or truck or, you know, to get to the banks of the flowing water where there's safety. And so the way you avoid that is just not taking that chance. And every year we see new video of people that drive through water that is clearly more than a couple inches deep. And sometimes they make it across through good fortune. Other times they don't. And, you know, it's, we just need to keep stressing the importance of being aware of the dangers of heavy rain, and don't put yourself in a position where you're in a car that's been swept off the road and you have to try to decide what to do next. It's a bad situation to be in.
Oh, I know. I remember when I lived in Texas and I was at the gym and I kept looking up at the TV and I saw an MCS, mesoscale convective system, just this huge storm that kept growing and growing. And I thought, that's going to be a lot of heavy rain. And I looked and looked like it was approaching the gym. So I went outside, got in my car, started driving, and the water was just going everywhere. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to listen to everything that I've reported for years as a meteorologist and as a reporter. I'm going to take my own advice. So I pulled into a nearby grocery store. I called a friend of mine. He had a huge truck that lifted up, you know, high, and he came, picked me up and gave me a ride home. And I went and got my car the next day. And I thought that was the best thing to do. I thought, I am just going to abandon my car, because at that point it was not safe to drive. And all the roads all around were like, you almost needed a canoe at that point.
Yeah, it's inconvenient, but surviving is more important than convenience at that stage. So kudos to you for doing the right thing.
Well, thanks.
We need to encourage others to think similarly, because the odds are, for most of us, the dangers we're going to see this spring, probably most of us won't see a tornado. I hope everyone doesn't, but there's going to be a few. But I can guarantee, if you're in this part of the country, lightning and very heavy rain that leads to flooding will occur at some point during the year.
Well, and speaking of those, so some things that people, we talked earlier, Bill, about, and just in case you're joining us, we're speaking with Bill Bunting, Deputy Director of the NOAA National Weather Service Storm Prediction Center, the SPC, in Norman. We're talking about a lot of different things to prepare you out there for severe weather season, which we are in right now for the next several months. It's just the way it is on the plains. And Bill, you mentioned earlier always having at least two different ways of getting severe weather information. And also, if you have a no weather radio, which I do, and I keep it plugged in, but important to have fresh batteries each spring so that if the power goes out, you still have a radio, you know, or whatever it is.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yep, battery power is a backup. Yeah. How many times do we lose power when a really bad storm moves through? It's unfortunate that it happens, you know, with some regularity. And even if it doesn't happen frequently, you need to be prepared for that eventuality. So having a battery backup, having a way to charge your cell phone if you lose power, you know, one of those battery charger devices. I have quite a few around our house and use that for powering emergency items, you know, if we lose power. We've been lucky lately, but we know that's not going to always continue. But just being prepared for that type of situation, some way to communicate with your family to make sure everybody's safe if they're not all together. Make sure you have prescriptions. Make sure you have boots that you can wear if there is, unfortunately, damage at your location so that you can move around safely without additional injury. And, you know, just the common sense things that we take for granted on a normal day-to-day basis. But definitely need to focus on if we lose power, if we're unable to travel for a short period of time, and just be prepared for that.
Okay. And also, people might need to know that not all storms move northeast. So coming up in just a few moments, stay right there. We're going to be back with Bill Bunting from the Storm Prediction Center and talk about making sure that you're aware and not just taking something for granted. Also, we're going to remind folks where to go in the event that you are issued a tornado watch. Stay right there. We'll be right back. And we're back. This is Amy Hatichek with Bill Bunting today, the Deputy Director of the NOAA National Weather Service Storm Prediction Center. Also, we call it SPC for Storm Prediction Center. And we are really thrilled to have Bill here today. It's just amazing the work that they do, overseeing radars and all the information to issue the watches, which let us know right off the bat about any conditions that are possible that day in severe weather. And this is the season in our area for the possibility of severe weather that can happen. And sometimes it happens quickly. And so, Bill, first of all, I know how fascinating it is as a meteorologist, and I mean, I'm not running the Storm Prediction Center, you are, and so we just so look up to that, and you, and one of the most intriguing jobs in the world. And what's it like there? What's the scenario? When is it just kind of crazy, or is it controlled chaos, or when there's a severe weather outbreak, is there extra staff, extra people looking at how many radars? Kind of give us the flavor, if you will.
Sure. You know, and I do get this question often, and I think folks might be surprised at my answer, and that is it's actually not chaotic at all. It's actually very orderly and very, sometimes it's even amazingly quiet, because what you will hear mostly would be all six of us, and that's how many are typically working during the day, typing furiously, preparing severe weather outlooks, preparing those technical mesoscale discussions that broadcasters and so many others rely on, typing the tornado watches themselves. We get really used to a fast operational tempo here. We average some threat of severe weather about 304 days a year. And so with that kind of frequency, you know, if we weren't prepared, we would probably pay a price in terms of the quality of our forecast. So our forecasters here know the days that are really important. We come to work with a pretty serious mindset every day, but on the bigger days, there's definitely a focus on how bad it could be and making sure that we do everything within our power to get the message out.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that is interesting. I would typically think of not people running around, but just sort of huge amount of staff. But wow, that's very reassuring to know that everyone is quietly typing out their warnings, and it's very orderly. And I know I've been there, and you've given me a tour, and, you know, I've covered a lot of events, going to different weather conferences, also myself being a member of the National Weather Association and the American Meteorological Society, and having both broadcast seals of approval. I know we've stopped in there during the conferences and visited, and we really appreciate that. You're always great about explaining. And I think that's how the Weather Service is, just always trying to educate anyone who has any questions. And that's so important. And I know that's your whole mission, to educate people and inform and save lives and property.
Yep, it is. And it's a team effort. You know, it's, as the National Weather Service or even as the Storm Prediction Center, we can't accomplish anything by ourselves. We can only accomplish it when we work with those who help us get the information out, and then hopefully it's received by those who are in danger in time to take some action, to make a decision to keep them and their families safe. So, you know, we're glad to have visitors. We're glad to talk with broadcast meteorologists, with meteorologists in the private sector, with emergency managers, because we're all part of that integrated warning team that works together to save lives. So, again, I can't overstress how important it is for all of us to work together, not just today when we're talking about outreach and education, or perhaps in a few days when, you know, dangerous storms are approaching a town.
Exactly. It takes everyone, and I know that may sound trite, but it really does, because anyone out there, the eyes and the ears, and you guys back there, and it just is amazing. And also, in addition to when we talk about severe weather, typically, you know, the things people, when they see the videos, it's, ooh, wow, the tornado or the wall cloud or the lightning strikes or cloud-to-ground lightning, the CGs and other things. But other things that are incredibly important and maybe almost, I don't want to say more important, but certainly equally, is the threat of heavy rain and flooding and making sure people know what to do and not drive into water where they can't tell how deep it is.
Yep, it's an excellent point. The two most common dangers of any thunderstorm are lightning and heavy rain and associated flooding. And so while 10% or so of all thunderstorms may be technically classified as severe with, you know, 1 inch or larger diameter hail, 60 mile per hour winds or greater, or the threat of a tornado, the vast majority of storms that we will all experience will be mainly a safety hazard for lightning and for heavy rain. And, you know, fortunately, it seems in recent years the number of lightning fatalities has diminished, and that, I think, is partly due to the more information and better awareness of the hazards. But flash flooding is the number one thunderstorm-related killer, more so than tornadoes, more so than lightning. I think a big part of it is because we've all driven through a flooded intersection or on a flooded road, and in most cases everything's fine. But you're exactly right. If you don't know how deep the water is or it begins to flow very quickly, it really only takes 6 to 12 inches of fast-moving water to sweep a car off the road. And at that point, you're virtually helpless unless you can get out quickly and get to a safe area. So we really want to stress that while we're talking about tornadoes and damaging windstorms and large hail, we can't ignore the risk of flash flooding and just heavy rain in general to make sure we take that threat seriously.
I know I've heard people say, well, I don't want to abandon my vehicle, and because if it's, you know, you're heading in a direction, if you can't turn around and the water's high, they say, oh, I don't want to leave. Well, you don't want to leave your vehicle, but you also don't want to die in the floods. So it's important.
You're exactly right. And, you know, I've seen too many videos over the course of my career of people, A, overestimating their confidence in getting across or underestimating the risk, however you want to look at it. And then once they get swept off the road, being virtually helpless to get out of their car or truck or, you know, to get to the banks of the flowing water where there's safety. And so the way you avoid that is just not taking that chance. And every year we see new video of people that drive through water that is clearly more than a couple inches deep. And sometimes they make it across through good fortune. Other times they don't. And, you know, it's, we just need to keep stressing the importance of being aware of the dangers of heavy rain, and don't put yourself in a position where you're in a car that's been swept off the road and you have to try to decide what to do next. It's a bad situation to be in.
Oh, I know. I remember when I lived in Texas and I was at the gym and I kept looking up at the TV and I saw an MCS, mesoscale convective system, just this huge storm that kept growing and growing. And I thought, that's going to be a lot of heavy rain. And I looked and looked like it was approaching the gym. So I went outside, got in my car, started driving, and the water was just going everywhere. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to listen to everything that I've reported for years as a meteorologist and as a reporter. I'm going to take my own advice. So I pulled into a nearby grocery store. I called a friend of mine. He had a huge truck that lifted up, you know, high, and he came, picked me up and gave me a ride home. And I went and got my car the next day. And I thought that was the best thing to do. I thought, I am just going to abandon my car, because at that point it was not safe to drive in all the roads all around were like, you almost needed a canoe at that point.
Yeah, it's inconvenient, but surviving is more important than convenience at that stage. So kudos to you for doing the right thing.
Well, thanks.
We need to encourage others to think similarly, because the odds are, for most of us, the dangers we're going to see this spring, probably most of us won't see a tornado. I hope everyone doesn't, but there's going to be a few. But I can guarantee, if you're in this part of the country, lightning and very heavy rain that leads to flooding will occur at some point during the year.
Well, and speaking of those, so some things that people, we talked earlier, Bill, about, and just in case you're joining us, we're speaking with Bill Bunting, Deputy Director of the NOAA National Weather Service Storm Prediction Center, the SPC, in Norman. We're talking about a lot of different things to prepare you out there for severe weather season, which we are in right now for the next several months. It's just the way it is on the plains. And Bill, you mentioned earlier always having at least two different ways of getting severe weather information. And also, if you have a no weather radio, which I do, and I keep it plugged in, but important to have fresh batteries each spring so that if the power goes out, you still have a radio, you know, or whatever it is.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yep, battery power is a backup. Yeah. How many times do we lose power when a really bad storm moves through? It's unfortunate that it happens, you know, with some regularity. And even if it doesn't happen frequently, you need to be prepared for that eventuality. So having a battery backup, having a way to charge your cell phone if you lose power, you know, one of those battery charger devices. I have quite a few around our house and use that for powering emergency items, you know, if we lose power. We've been lucky lately, but we know that's not going to always continue. But just being prepared for that type of situation, some way to communicate with your family to make sure everybody's safe if they're not all together. Make sure you have prescriptions. Make sure you have boots that you can wear if there is, unfortunately, damage at your location so that you can move around safely without additional injury. And, you know, just the common sense things that we take for granted on a normal day-to-day basis, but definitely need to focus on if we lose power, if we're unable to travel for a short period of time, and just be prepared for that.
Okay. And also, people might need to know that not all storms move northeast. So coming up in just a few moments, stay right there. We're going to be back with Bill Bunting from the Storm Prediction Center and talk about making sure that you're aware and not just taking something for granted. Also, we're going to remind folks where to go in the event that you are issued a tornado watch. Stay right there. We'll be right back.